Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 150, Wahoo! Of Wheat All About It, entitled Ranking the Wheat Industry's Challenges by Glenn Squires. That's right, my boss, Glenn Squires, CEO of the Washington Grain Commission since 2012, sits down with me to discuss the surprisingly fast-paced world of wheat. Actually, we didn't sit down. Glenn, you don't mind if I call him Glenn, do you? Has a standing desk, which he uses regularly. This is the fourth time you've heard Glenn on a podcast. Episode 103 was entitled, Glenn Squires Lives, Breathes, and Talks Wheat. He and WGC Vice President Mary Palmer Sullivan also shared a podcast in episode 73 entitled, Falling Numbers, Rising Optimism. And in episode 17, I recorded a presentation Glenn made at Farm Forum entitled, Wheat's Ups and Downs. All of those podcasts and 146 others are available at the WGC website, wagrains.org. Go to the bottom of the page, click on summaries, and navigate back into time. Given that this podcast is sponsored by the Washington Grain Commission, it's only appropriate to give Glenn airtime. The fact that this podcast coincides with episode 150, which is quite a landmark for yours truly, is icing on the cake. Imagine it was 150 weeks ago, on January 2nd, 2017, that I made Wheat All About It a weekly podcast. From then until now, I've made like the U.S. Postal Service. You know, neither snow, nor rain, nor heat, nor gloom of night. Only in my case, I've carried on through botched interviews, malfunctioning equipment, and ongoing skeptics to bring you, my faithful listeners, the only podcast in the nation that features wheat in its title. And why not? It is, after all, the only crop called the staff of life. Glenn and I have worked together for 11 years, but we've known each other longer than that. I was a Capital Press reporter, and he was an analyst for what was then the Washington Wheat Commission when we first met. Back then, I marveled at the charts he created for meetings, which showed graphically the ongoing gyrations of the grain industry. I even wrote a story about his PowerPoint talent and remember the opening line, Glenn Squires is a chart-making master. Since Program Director Joe Bippert came on board at the WGC 2 years ago, the mantle of chartmaster has passed to him. And Glenn devotes more of his time to dealing with the array of challenges that are constantly pulling at him. During the day, he's on the telephone a lot, talking to state, regional, and national leaders on issues that are as varied as a year's worth of weather. And because our most important customers are in Asia, he's often on the telephone in the evenings too. There is an age when the sentence, Glenn travels a lot, sounds exotic and fun. That doesn't last long, though, and what motivates Glenn and the commissioners who travel overseas is not enjoyment. Of course, everyone tries to make trips as agreeable as possible, but the goal, besides addressing specific wheat concerns or challenges, is because meeting face-to-face is the best way to promote wheat and ensure long-term relationships with customers. Because many of those customers are 7,000 miles away, however, means hours spent sitting on an airplane, which is among the reasons for Glenn's standing desk. As evidence of Glenn's packed schedule, it even took me, a while to schedule a conversation with him. It wasn't because he didn't want to do the interview. He was simply having difficulty finding the 30 minutes free of phone calls and other obligations. I know you probably think I'm blowing smoke somewhere, but Glenn is among the hardest working, most tenacious individuals I've ever met, and just staying within sight of him in this marathon called the wheat industry has required me to up my game. Hence this podcast, celebrating its 150th episode. I open my conversation with Glenn by asking him how he would rank the top three issues facing the wheat industry over the last 6 months. It was tough to pin him down.
I might put the discovery of genetically modified wheat in a field in eastern Washington at number one. And I say might because you got to remember, this is the fourth time GE wheat has been found in the Northwest. The first time GE wheat plants were found was in May 2013 in Oregon, followed by a find in Montana, 2015. The first Washington find was in 2016, and then again in May of this year.
And what have we learned about the event that occurred in Washington this year?
First of all, I have to commend the U.S. regulatory system. So the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, called APHIS, is the agency that oversees GE discoveries. The agency has been good, really good, at communicating with industry and working with other agencies and our buyers, both directly and through overseas embassies, Foreign Ag Service, for example, to ensure minimal market disruptions. So after the first discovery in Oregon, there didn't seem to be an established protocol in terms of communication. That's improved a lot, and a lot of the learned education was used during the 2019 event here in Washington, which really helped to minimize its impact on farmers and the market. So in August, we had a team from Japan Ministry of Ag, Forestry, and Food, MAF is what it's referred to, come to eastern Washington from Tokyo, where they were joined with a contingent of APHIS officials who came from Washington, D.C. So it was a collaborative effort, meet together, both countries, to ensure that grain continues to flow. It was a tremendous opportunity to participate in that. So far from being frustrated, which seemed to be the order of the day in 2016, during the first discovery of GE plants in the state, I've actually been quite impressed with the unified effort to minimize any market disruption.
So are there any theories on why these events are happening?
Yeah, I think everybody has a theory, although I haven't heard anyone suggest that aliens planted it yet. Although I have to tell you, I don't know. It could range from sabotage all the way to poor management of discontinued test sites. One thing we do know is our markets, Japan, Korea, Taiwan, those Southeast Asia, and even Latin America, they don't want GMO wheat. When these events happen, some of them require that the U.S. develop a test that allows them to ensure the wheat they receive is GM-free. The last thing we want is a market shutdown because of GE wheat. So figuring out where, why these events have periodically occurred and developing protocols that can be followed is important for APHIS, for our customers, the Grain Commission, farmers in our region and beyond. Rest assured, we're all working very hard to ensure that our wheat keeps moving.
Can you give us some examples of what's been done to ensure that outcome?
Sure. Since 2013, WSU has been spraying alleyways in all the variety testing plots looking for any plants that may have survived a glyphosate spray. So they've been planting, spraying thousands of lines of wheat with glyphosate. It's really simple, but it's an effective way to determine, is there anything out there that's resistance that's showing up in our existing varieties or even experimental lines? Everything has been negative since that testing program started 7 years ago. So, you know, we're looking at continuing to investigate other methods to ensure the integrity of the wheat supply. But, you know, this is really good that we've got this kind of information and background that we can convey to our market.
Any other updates about the GE event?
Well, let's see. So APHIS was on the ground this year with investigators to conduct their fact-finding work, and we'll know what they conclude when they release their final report. I think it's important to bear in mind they didn't come up with any definitive conclusion in the 2013 Oregon event or even in the prior Washington event. Also, I think we should remember that there is no GE wheat approved for production in the U.S. These are all finds of things not approved.
Yes, and the USDA has certified that there has been no GE wheat that has entered commercial channels. So let's move on from GE wheat. What's number two on your list of challenges for the wheat industry?
Well, there's so many challenges that could come in at number two, but certainly the trade environment that we're facing in the world is important because it relates directly to price. I believe one of your podcasts with Randy Fortenberry, he said that there hasn't been as many trade issues facing the U.S. at any time since the 1930s. So we are definitely living in interesting times.
With regard to the trade challenges facing the wheat industry, what's keeping you up at night?
Well, I will tell you that everyone in the Pacific Northwest is sleeping a lot better since President Trump and the Prime Minister of Japan, Abe, agreed to a trade agreement between the two countries. So U.S. wheat will now be treated on the same basis as Canadian and Australian wheat into the Japanese market. That's huge, because for about a year, we've been at a price disadvantage to our competitors, thanks to their membership in the trade treaty that President Trump withdrew the U.S. from, the TPP.
Why is Japan so important, Glenn?
Well, I'd say Japan is now our number two market after the Philippines, but they're what you might call our flagship customer. Since late 1940s, 1949, they've bought more U.S. wheat than any other country in the world. That's saying a lot. And their milling infrastructure, product development, you know, it's unparalleled. In fact, Japan's not important just for Japan. Japan is important for the influence on other countries in Asia. And actually the world. That also holds true for South Korea, which is our number three market. Very sophisticated markets. Of course, the Philippines, our number one market, comes in for a big emphasis. In fact, you know, the Filipinos tell us that they love our soft white wheat. They also tell us that they love American infrastructure and logistics. So when you talk about what keeps us up at night, believe me, none of our customers want to worry about the wheat they ordered showing up out of spec, showing up late, or even not showing up at all. So if we ignore the infrastructure, you know, the exporters who work with the barge companies and the railroad, you know, that all work with the upcountry elevators, you know, we do so at our peril. It's a system that works together to get our wheat where it needs to go. So farmers are the first link in the grain chain, but any broken link moving through the system can hurt that delivery system. And
yes, yes, absolutely. Speaking of challenges, where does chemical weed resistance come in?
Boy, it's a huge issue for farmers. And the board of the Grain Commission actually recognized earlier this year when WSU's Cook Chair in Research went to Ian Burke, a weed scientist. Named after Jim Cook, the ARS plant pathologist, the Grain Commission established the chair in 1997 with a $1.5 million endowment. The interest from that endowment is expended on research work for the Cook Endowed Chair, and that'll now include a weed component, among other things.
Okay, so speaking of those other things, are you concerned about the target that the herbicide glyphosate, also known as Roundup, seems to be carrying on its back?
Yes, I am. Roundup's been a transformative herbicide for agriculture. It's allowed all of the farmers to likely save millions of tons of soil by using it to manage weeds in conjunction or in combination with minimum or no-till seeding. I don't think Roundup's dangerous, but even if it was, that should require some type of risk-benefit analysis, because believe me, there have been plenty of benefits from its use. In fact, you know, I'm just thinking if glyphosate were to be lost, I don't know how farmers would react, but we do know that tillage was the method of weed control before the herbicide came on the scene. I'd hate to see tillage return to the levels of 30 years ago.
Okay, so does that mean then that resistance is number three on your list of the top three issues over the last 6 months?
No, but it's up there with number two. as is maintaining our transportation infrastructure. I think it's really important to talk about that. Our rail, the rail system, the Snake Columbia River system, and that river system, of course, includes dams and locks and all the way out to the jetties, including the jetties at the mouth of the Columbia River. In fact, I kind of hate putting a numerical value on the issues we face. I may have placed GE Wheat up there, or the GE event at number one, but you know, for the long term, really maintaining the Snake Columbia River infrastructure could easily be the most important issue facing Eastern Washington farmers and actually the region.
Okay, so let me be devil's advocate for a moment, Glenn. I've been at the WGC for 11 years, and in all that time, there's been nothing but talk about the dams. Breachers want a breach, and nothing will satisfy them except that. River users, including wheat farmers, ports, etc., want to maintain the dams, and nothing will satisfy them but that. Meanwhile, it would take an act of Congress and a federal appropriation to begin the breaching process. That doesn't seem likely. Are we making much ado about nothing?
I don't believe so. Actually, you know, it's true that the idea of dam breaching was on the back burner for a while, but you know, in May 2016, when Portland District Judge Simon ruled against the biological opinion that had been forged previously, and said that breaching should be one of the alternatives considered in the future, that brought the issue back to the hottest part of the stove. And just recently, now some are saying that breaching four Snake River dams is the solution to saving orcas in the Puget Sound. So go figure. But it's back on the hot burner.
Glenn, I mean, you know, we see BNSF trains go by constantly by outside of our office every day. I mean, they're chugging by. We have this great rail system. Do we really need the river?
So currently about 60% of the wheat grown in eastern Washington goes down the river to Portland. I'd say in North Idaho it's probably close to 100%. But that's only really part of the issue. We don't want to become a Montana or other state where the railroad is the only game in town. And as such, they can charge much higher rates. So being a captive shipper, that is captive to a single transportation mode, is not in our best interest economically or logistically. Can you imagine plunking another 60% of our wheat on trains? It's not just about rail congestion through the Columbia Gorge and in Portland that already exists. History has shown that when rail capacity becomes limited, the railroads haul freight that brings the highest revenue. And it's usually long hauls, and it's higher valued product. Wheat typically is the first to fall off. We've seen that in the past. And remember what I said about the Filipinos a moment ago. It's not just about our wheat that they love. It's our logistics and infrastructure. I can't emphasize that enough. And it's true for all of our customers. We need the railroads and we need the river system for navigation.
Okay, well, it's time for us to get back to work here at the Washington Grain Commission. Anything else that you want to add?
I would like to give a shout out to our to the commissioners who serve on the Grain Commission. You know, without question, they are committed to the small grains industry, and they represent their districts well. They devote a tremendous amount of time on behalf of the industry. Also, speaking of the commission, the Grain Commission board made a decision some years ago now to leverage funding from the assessments that farmers contribute whenever possible. So one of the most obvious recent examples of that approach was the new wheat greenhouse on the Washington State University campus, which opened in 2015. On a smaller scale, researchers at WSU often use funding we provide to leverage additional funds, grants from other sources. In fact, WSU is the largest recipient of grant dollars in the country. And so that leverage really is valuable. So these WSU researchers, they're addressing a myriad of issues facing farmers in today's environment. And, I think that the Grain Commission, the money is one kind of leverage, And there's also leverage and cooperation. So working with ARS, the Agricultural Research Service from USDA, is another example. We have both worked hard to pull together, and it's paying off. So the new ARS scientist in Pullman to investigate wheat quality, specifically falling number problem, happened through a convergence of events, but it really wouldn't have occurred at all if we hadn't established a good relationship with them in the first place.
So you're saying that it's sort of like real estate, except instead of location, location, location being the first three ingredients of success, you're saying it's relationship, relationship, relationship.
Exactly. Nothing beats building relationships wherever you are in the world and whatever challenge you're working on to solve.
It's nice to know that despite the avalanche of technology that is supposed to make our lives better, that it's face-to-face meetings, something we Homo sapiens have been doing for millions of years, that is the key ingredient for ensuring our wheat industry remains vibrant and profitable. It makes me feel all warm and gooey inside, knowing that success comes down to that which all of us are working on throughout our lives, forming relationships. You heard Glenn mention Randy Fortenberry in our conversation. That's T. Randall Fortenberry to you, the WSU economist who holds the Thomas B. Mick Chair in Agricultural Economics at WSU. Tom Mick, of course, was the previous CEO at the Washington Grain Commission. Please visit the Washington Grain Commission Facebook page to see a photo of Glenn and that standing desk I told you about. And while you're there, make it a point to follow the WGC's page as another great way to stay abreast of these weekly podcasts, of which, did I mention, this is the 150th episode? I hope you've enjoyed this podcast featuring my boss in an episode entitled Ranking the Wheat Industry's Challenges by Glenn Squires, right here on Wheat All About It.
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when there's not enough wheat. We feed you.